Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
I am Abhash, and I am your host today on this episode of the Shape of Work podcast. On this episode of the Shape of Work podcast, I talk to Ruhi Pandey, a seasoned HR professional who is passionate about coaching, leading HR transformation strategy, and diversity. She holds an MSc in Industrial and Organizational Psychology from Birkbeck College, London. Ruhi brings with her 2 decades of exceptional experience of building and enabling engaged and capable people power across a diverse set of industries. Currently, Ruhi allays the role of Chief Human Resources Officer with her 125-year-old international conglomerate Godrej Group for their newest company, Godrej Housing Finance. On this episode, she talks about how HR functions should go about enabling younger managers to become leaders, given the resource constraints, especially with growing companies. She also throws some light on the role of psychology in the HR function. Welcome to the Shape of Work podcast, Ruhi. Really grateful to have you here. Before we get started with some of the topics that I wanted to cover on this podcast, can you tell the listeners, give the listeners a brief overview of how you started? Maybe take us through your career graph.
Yeah, absolutely. Sabash, I actually have had like not the traditional entry into HR directly. And my early days were spent in a business role in an organization called ITC. And I personally feel that that grounding, which I got in the first few years of handling a P&L, continued to help me through my career in HR. Of course, very early on, I would say third or year into my career, I realized that my interest was deeply in the people's space. And while numbers excited me, what actually excited me much more was development of people and talking to people, understanding how I could help them, understanding how people could make a huge difference in improving profits, improving stakeholder value. And I moved into HR within ITC itself, started my career in HR in learning and development. Spent about a reasonable amount of time there. Then I moved into a very different sector, which is I joined a company called NIIT, which is into IT, a fabulous company for HR practices, and again, excellent kind of a place to hone your HR skills and also to learn and create new initiatives there. I did that for a while, and then I moved into another organization called Reliance. I was taking care of HR for Reliance Brands. It was into fashion apparel. Again, a very different industry altogether from the earlier two. Understood a lot about how fashion works, how brands work. That was an amazing experience as well. Then I joined a company called Marico. Again, kind of known for its HR practices. Amazing stint there. I had some like really great experiences. That was again in the consumer space. And then I moved into my stint, now my current organization, which is Godrej. Started as a CHRO of Godrej Properties, which is real estate. Fantastic experience again. The organization was in a scale-up phase. It's an amazing company to work with, very ambitious, very bold. And then to my last stint, which is a startup and in financial services. So I don't know whether it's by design or it's just a stroke of luck that I've just gotten to work in HR roles in so many different industries with so many amazing bosses, and have been able to create plans, create structures around HR, and have been able to add value. So that's how my HR career pans out. Apart from the management degree I have, I also, in the meanwhile, developed a deep interest in coaching and psychology. So my education, I'm also a psychologist from the London University, and I also did my certification as a professional coach from the International Coaching Federation. So that's a bit about me.
Wow, that is just a fantastic and diverse set of experiences.
And, you know, the amount of learning that you will have had with all these experiences, yeah. I'm pretty sure right. listeners would like to know more about that. But specifically, I think you are very passionate about coaching and training and yeah. learning and development yeah. and such, right?
That's
so,
right. Yeah.
Can you give us sort of an explanation of what that means? How important is it in shaping the careers of employees, defining their career yeah. path within yeah. the yeah. organization and such?
Yeah, yeah. You know, learning and development in the HR space has come a long way from what it used to be when I actually started doing my first stint in learning. And so has HR. I've seen the entire human resources space evolve from perhaps when I started out earlier, from, you know, sometimes being just the guys who'd called on birthdays to cut cakes, primarily being, you know, the role, primarily playing the role of an order taker, saying, you know, okay, ask and you will get. So HR will be called when the line leaders need something or, you know, some event has to be organized. And from that to today where, you know, in the post-COVID world, I've seen the HR folks stand so tall. It put HR right in the eye of the storm, and I'm kind of so proud to see how the HR fraternity woke up to it, stood, you know, shoulder to shoulder with all the line leaders, managed employees, managed the business pressures, and continued to focus even today on safety and well-being of employees. So that's the journey the HR folks have kind of taken. They've got the seat at the table. And initially, I used to often see that we'd be called to tell us that, oh, I think that this training program is needed. And please do this training program. So it was that kind of an order taker. I'm giving you that kind of a background just so that then that sure. knits in very well with the next phase of my answer. Nowadays, it's a lot about not just learning and development. It's a lot about learning, organization development. They are two different spaces altogether. So, and oftentimes very loosely held. And for people seeking out a career in HR, for leaders who are interested in the people space, it's important to understand the fundamental differences. So training or learning, as we call it today, is all about building skills. You know, you kind of call in an expert on a particular subject. You have people who get trained. A lot of times these days we use e-learning. Sometimes you used to, in the pre-COVID era, have batches and you would train people imparting skills. Just to give you an example, back from where I work currently, which is Godrej Housing Finance, for example, if you need people to understand how to sell home loans, we'd run a training. The person who's imparting the training is an expert and he or she is giving the answers to the person. You may have trainings which are functional. Sometimes you also have trainings which are behavioral. Communication skills, how do you negotiate better? How do you manage key accounts? And that's purely based on how a cohort of people is expected to behave. Yeah. Very important, because if you don't know your product, if you don't know what core skills you need, whether they are in the technical or in the people space or in the behavioral space, you won't be able to get your job done well. Okay. It's all about telling you what needs to be done. Coaching is a huge amount of self-development. The answers have to come from within. The coach is not an expert. The job of the coach is to help you discover those answers. So a good coach never tells. A good coach helps the coachee to move from the, like we call it, the unproductive to the productive zone. And a lot of answers or a lot of learning happens by the coachee discovering those answers. In the earlier part of your career, training is very important because you're building skills. You're learning new skills every day. The amount of change we see in the environment today, curriculums also keep changing in the training, you know, in the training field. So what is relevant today may not be relevant tomorrow. We've seen a shift. We were doing a lot of selling personally. Now a lot of selling is required to be done digitally. Yeah. Managers were doing reviews personally, one-on-one, and they had skills. They had a particular way of doing it. Now they are kind of not sure how to do it when you're doing it digitally. You train people then because you're providing them answers, saying, okay, these are five set of answers. And it's nuanced. In some trainings, the answer is straightforward. In some trainings, it's a bit of self-discovery. But I think what happens in the second half of your career, once you've established, you've spent 4 or 5 years, is that you have to discover a lot of these, what we call as management skills. Handling diversity. How are you in handling conflict? Are you kind of able to take decisions? How are you taking decisions? How do you lead your team? Now, those are not straight-jacketed answers. It varies from person to person. And the coach's job is then to work with the coachee very one-on-one and help that discovery. It's a very intense process. The bond between a coach and a coachee continues. And I have been very fortunate enough. And in fact, that's one place which gives me a lot of joy because I continue to coach people one-on-one. It's intense. It takes a lot of time. But when you really see the coachees get that aha moment, realize those answers for themselves, go back, implement them, it really creates that mass scale change in that person. So these are two very, very different areas. The third area, which is still developing, and some organizations do a fab job of it, is called organization behavior, OB, organization development, organization behavior. That, I would tell you, is a very strategic area, Vash, because that is not purely about HR. That's about what your strategy is and how are you going to create empowering systems? How are your leaders taking decisions? What does the structure look like? How do teams work together? And in the knowledge economy we are now, in the digital economy we are now, organizational behavior plays a very, very critical part. And it's like in the psychologists, in the organization psychologists, it's still a debate whether organization development is a part of HR or is it a separate function altogether, because that's a very critical skill. So these actually, to be very frank, in HR are really my core areas of interest and expertise as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. A couple of questions that came to my mind while you were answering that question. One is, you know, you talk about coaching and leadership development and such. And I know the current organization that you're working for is very much like a startup, right? Like you said.
Yeah, that's right.
But in a startup setup, the resources are sort of limited, right? So coaching, mentoring, leadership development, these might not be possible in an organized fashion, right? You're essentially, you end up learning from a simulation, looking at what other people are doing. So what are your thoughts on, you know, some of the younger managers, how should they go about, how should people managers and HRs or people in the HR function, people function, enable these younger managers to sort of become leaders and such, given that, you know, they are in a resource-constrained environment?
Understood. So I think two things there, if you ask me, Abhash, frankly. This was, of course, my first startup stint, and I've totally enjoyed it because startup is very, very different from anything else one would have ever done. It's in my entire HR career, I have been exposed not just to different industries. I've also been exposed to different phases of the business, like handling a merger, handling an acquisition. I handled a demerger, handling something which is at scale, which is what I told you. GPL was all about scaling up and becoming big. And this is a startup where pretty much you're starting from ground zero. So you're laying the foundations, laying the bricks, and then you're also flying as you're laying those bricks, right? I would say that organizations, when they start doing, when they look at their strategies, have multiple pronged strategies. In our case, we said our customer proposition will be about being very customer focused, heavily built on great analytics, heavily built on a great technology stack, heavily built on a couple of other things. And then also we want to have an organization which is empowered and inclusive, where people become the differentiator. Now, oftentimes what happens is people have very, very clear idea about what the technology stack is. From A to Z. No, nothing is left to imagination. Okay. They have a very clear idea on what infrastructure you need. They will have a very clear idea about the underwriting policies. I'm talking about financial services. It varies from company to company. But sometimes people just think that organization culture should be left. No one specified what that culture should be. I'm very fortunate that, and that should never be done, because whether we like it or not, every organization has a culture. So you have two options. Either you decide and define what that culture is and work towards making it happen, or you just allow it to develop to what it is and then at a later stage define it and try to change it, which never happens. So in startup is the best time to lay the foundations of what the culture should look like. So fortunately, in our case, we started with that. The balance the HR team in such a case has to create, and I'll come to your answer of question of how HR leverages these younger managers, but in a startup, the balance which HR has to create, or in any organization, is to understand the phase of the company, understand what the business strategy is, and then create frameworks around it. For me, in the startup, it was very important, because startups are all about what? They are all about energy. They are all about you know, being tightly knit. So everyone knows what the other person is doing. They're all about that entire environment where everyone feels a part of the entire culture. They're all about taking from the personalities of the founders. And in our case, the founders are, you know, a bunch of CXOs along with me and RMD and, you know, what the founders want. And that culture permeates. Now, if I have to look at my background, I have been in large-scale companies. Large-scale companies, HR can't be left so loose. You have to have very strong processes and you kind of run them. But in a startup, your frameworks have to be very unobtrusive. No one should know that this is a framework. Framework has to operate very silently in the background and never interfere with personalities, never interfere with that energy. I mean, imagine if someone says, okay, here's what I want, and I pull out a rule book and say, okay, here's the rule book. So, but at the same time, if you leave startups totally loose, then, you know, and ask, the startups never remain startups for life, right? They scale up very fast. So, and we have seen that happening to us. We're going to double and we're going to triple. So if you don't put frameworks early on, it can create mayhem. So we had, as the HR team, we had to create a balance and we put a very silent framework. We got people involved. We understood what the cultural blocks are. We put the culture out there. We decoded it into processes. But we always ensured that the processes run silently. So people, as they continue to come in, slowly, slowly start getting used to this entire concept that, there's a culture. Here's what the managers are. Here's how managers are expected to behave. And in fact, it's interesting that you mentioned the generation, the younger generation, because about 90% of our population is millennials and Gen Z. So we technically have a very young workforce. And by the talent strategy which we had created, we said we want to take a punt on younger people. We want to hire for hunger, ambition, and intellect. And we will groom them. So that brings me now to the second question you have asked, that how do HR folks work with people managers in order to create this culture? I think there are three, four things which we need to do. First things first, coming to the HR personnel themselves. Like I said, you know, we need to understand where the organization is headed. What is really the strategy the organization is creating? And when I say that we need to become, we need to understand the business strategy, we don't need to become business people. Because there are business people doing that. Correct. If HR people also become business people, then there'll be no HR. You need to understand where are the competitive advantages for the company, what are going to be our core differentiators, what are the building blocks, go out there in the market. Sometimes I see HR folk who hesitate to go out there in the market and face consumers, but we need to do that. We need to go out there, understand what our customers are looking at, and then kind of reverse the chain and try and see that where is that HR has to come in very unobtrusively and create those frameworks, right? That's number one. When HR people understand business, and they are able to talk their language, they are able to influence business folks better. Business people like HR people to speak the business language, and thereby that gives the HR people credibility. The challenge is that the balance cannot totally be tipped towards the other side, because one of the critical roles the HR people play is be of that of an employee champion. In any organization, when you talk to the marketing head, the marketing person will always know the customer the best, because the marketing person is out there. He or she meets customers, they understand, they run surveys, and they understand what the consumer wants. Similarly, I keep telling my team is that if someone needs to know people the best, it has to be the HR person. So spend time with your employees, understand what's going on, understand the pulse, make yourself so approachable. Like if you've got 8 hours in a day, spend 2 hours talking to employees. And I try to do that a lot myself, because when you lose track of what your employees are facing, then how will you stand up to your, you know, your business people? Last but not the least, while, you know, about, I would say, 5 odd years back, people didn't think like that. More and more people are realizing HR is an expertise function. It cannot be done by everyone and anyone. It needs a mindset and it needs expertise. So build expertise. And one of the expertise the HR folks need to build is to calibrate each individual into what we call as you know, strengths, weaknesses, and developments and an individual development plan. So how should HR folks work with this younger generation hand in hand to make them better people managers is to truly understand, you know, what is the expectation of the organization from the people managers? Decode that, because every organization expects differently. I know of companies which expect line managers to do recruitment. I know of companies which expect line managers to do everything, you know, recruit people, get people on board, handle compensation, manage your teams, ensure your team attrition doesn't happen. There are organizations which expect the line managers to coach people really well. So what do you expect your managers to do. Look at that and understand where that is. And then secondly, understand these people managers at an intricate level and use tools to do that, not just your own intelligence. Use 360s, use psychometric instruments. There are some amazing psychometric instruments available out there. So learn what psychometric instruments are all about. In fact, Abhash, one of the reasons why I did the psychology course was to understand individuals at a deeper level. And I think that really helps me pitch my programs better. I encourage HR teams to become coaches themselves. Learn how coaching is done. Start coaching these managers. So the managers then start feeling that HR is my partner. I can go to that person to sort my issues. Here's an employee who needs to be handled like this. I'm facing this issue with that person. Let me go back to my HR business partner and talk to them. So I would say, you know, leveraging your understanding of business to influence business stakeholders better, building expertise, really, really knowing your people the best in the company. And then partnering these business managers through using tools like 360, psychometric assessment, understanding them at a deeper level to, you know, build that culture. Those would be a few areas which HR spokes can use.
Wow, that was a really in-depth answer. I certainly learned a lot there. Two couple of things. So one is one interesting point that you brought up is, you know, the role of psychology in the HR function, right? And you having been done your certification in psychology, right? So what other things can be like, I mean, of course, certification is one way to go about it, but say for a lay person in the HR function, someone who has just started in the HR function, how would they go about learning this skill in particular?
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's a short answer for course I've done is a master's in psychology. It's not a certification. Mm-hmm. So there's no short answer. If you need to learn psychology, you'll have to study psychology. Okay. It's a very vast field, very loosely used term, but you need to get into it in depth. Sure. There's a lot of research you need to do. There's a lot of facets. There's individual psychology, there is organization psychology, there's how you look at learning and development, how you look at organization behavior. So how do you look at research in itself? And, you know, one of the things which at least I learned a lot out of my psychology master's is, apart from the understanding of individuals, also to look at how you can do research to get the right answers, how you can look at correlations. So when we launch programs, or we are launching a new benefit for employees, how do you really look at correlations between whether what you launched works or not? When you're looking at a new performance management, what are the objectives you are trying to achieve? When you're looking at a new psychometric instrument, what were you trying to look at? How does your recruitment process function? What are you hiring? Really, really understanding the depth of details, data, research, and that's what I think gives an edge to an HR professional. So what I would suggest to HR folks who are starting out afresh in this industry would be two things. One, I think at a very early on stage, we discussed, you know, building expertise that could be done in many ways. Smaller programs in the market, you know, there are weekly, there are programs which are a week, understanding psychometric instruments a little better, understanding your customers a little better. Those could be one. Learning from people, best practices in the industry. There's so many great things happening out there. Read and observe. There are research papers which are available. There are research papers which are available on multiple research sites, ResearchGate, ScienceDirect.com. So many amazing amount of research is there. So if you're planning to do something different, go out there and read research. Google has so many amazing research papers which are out there. Understand and learn. Keep yourself abreast. Learn from books. And last but not the least, you know, when you are implementing plans within your organization, try and see that here's what I did. What is it that the business and the employees are getting? Ask yourself that question again and again. And I would say that's a process. And I totally feel that not just in the HR, but in any function, to keep yourself relevant across stages of your career, you will have to take study breaks. There is no short answer to that. Now, there are programs which you can do along with your job. They will, of course, be. And I would say the more meaningful the course, the tougher it is on you. So really look at what these courses are out there in the market and go ahead and do that. Why not?
Nice. And the other question that I was going to ask you as a follow-up to your previous answer was, you know, to go a step back. And you said, you know, at GHF, 90% of the employees are millennials and Gen Z. And I'm assuming most of them, they have been hired in the past 12 to 14 months. I'm talking about from a pandemic perspective. So that would be an interesting insight, I guess, for the listeners. Yeah. Like, how did you go about building this team from scratch in a setting like this?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I really wish that I would say that, you know, we planned for it and we were very wise and, you know, we had done all that. GHF had like an amazing start, and we were, while we were waiting to launch our businesses, when the first round of the pandemic stuck up. And here we were thinking, okay, we're going to launch four cities and we have to hire people. We have to scale this up. And such is the life, right? We live in a, I don't even know whether it's a VUCA world anymore. The complications and the changes are becoming like too frequent right now. So that stuck us. And then we kind of got together to understand how do we go about doing this now. And in fact, about, I think, more than half of our population got recruited. Oh, and about two-thirds of our population got onboarded during the entire pandemic. So they're all digital. And imagine in a startup, which is all about energy and connect, and in a company which is totally new, which is different from other players in the market, when you try to do that, it becomes like really, really tough. So here are a few things we did. We heavily invested in, you know, the digital media. You know, so two, three things we did. First, we said, we got the entire HR team and the business team together. And till the HR team themselves had the very clear answer as to how we would do recruitment right now. We did not do anything. So I spent about 75% of the time in planning, so that you don't go wrong, because digital recruitment is not something which is very commonplace. And especially when you're building up your team, you know, it's you've got a straw man of the person you're trying to hire, and you're not able to meet the people physically. They are unable to come to your office and meet you physically. Then how do you ensure that that right recruitment process happens? You interview well, and as well as the candidate gets the right experience. So till we were not very clear, I kind of held on, and we said, okay, let's lay out the steps. What are we going to do? Who's going to recruit? Who's going to talk? What will be the branding like, etc., etc.? And the team kind of turned that around. And then we started by saying, okay, this can't be only done by the HR team. We need referrals. We need digital. Let's involve everyone. So we created a core team, line leaders, young leaders, got them together. And then when we said, okay, let's go to LinkedIn, let's go to Instagram. And we went out there with these digital drives and created excitement. Fortunately for us, people were, because there was very little physical movement happening, a lot of people were totally digitally hooked. The second thing we had to ensure is that now that we are doing digital, which is new for us also, the candidate experience at no point of time can be compromised on. Because if it's a digital drive, you will end up meeting more people. More people will apply. It'll be far more difficult for you to kind of start deselecting just by the sheer number of applications which you're getting. So it's very important that each candidate you meet has to be given the right experience, right? Both in the interest of the candidate esteem and also in the interest of the fact that you should get the right person. So we trained our managers on it. You know, what are the rights and wrongs? You know, what? How should you interview? How long should a digital interview be? How will you ensure that you are able to catch the body language of the person in the right way? And we did that. We trained our own team. We trained the line leaders. And then we started having interviews. We ensured that we got back to candidates with the right answer. We got back to candidates promptly. Of course, it meant a huge amount of work for the HR team. But you know, it was with the kind of support we had from people across the organization, it was amazing. Then, of course, making the offers, talking to these people, keeping in touch with them. Because digital at the end of the day is a medium which initially people were getting very fatigued with, because they were on laptops through the day, then they were on the laptops for the interviews, then every time you talk to them, you're on phone. So there was fatigue building in. So how do you ensure that you keep in touch with the candidates while you post your offer to the time they join, so that there are no dropouts? And last but not the least, how do you ensure that by the time they join, they get the right assimilation? Because for us, that's very important. We're a new company. So how do you assimilate employees? And there I would say, you know, we got our line leaders. We created in a very fast span of time. We created our intranet portals. We ensured that, you know, people got dockets in advance. Even before they came to us, they went through some of our values, recordings of our leaders, what we want to create. And I mean, it was like a very heartening journey. I would say we were far more disciplined. It gave us like that structure and high amount of discipline, which sometimes in office you may miss, because office is fluid. When you go in thinking I'm going to do 10 things, sometimes what happens is you actually end up only doing two. because five people walked into your cabin and then you were chatting. Now that, of course, has, Abhash, a huge advantage. Yeah. The informal conversations, all of us have realized, give us so much joy. Yeah. But at the same time, the structure, the discipline of doing open houses, the way we did it during the pandemic and each leader kind of rose to that occasion was amazing. Quizzes, leveraging your learning platforms. I think those were the ways in which we were able to engage. And I think that the millennials are the Generation Z, the two folks who are now heavily into workforces and will continue to increase as years go by, are able to adapt to this faster than one would think. I think they are able to, they are able to understand what this really means, and their ability to understand it is far higher than any one of us. So it's a lot of reverse learning. It's like they call reverse mentoring, right? So I think in many ways, it's been a discovery for us as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's just fascinating stuff. I mean, even at SpringWorks, I think we've hired a lot of people, but nothing close to the numbers that you were talking about. And it, very, very interesting insights there. How do you sort of, now that, I mean, is it in the scale-up? Would you say GHF is in the scale-up phase currently, or is it?
It is, yes. It is definitely in the scale-up phase. Mm-hmm. And we kind of want to expand our offerings. We want to expand the number of cities we are working out of. And thereby, every time you go and hire, you hire new skill sets.
Correct.
The industry. One of the things we've also tried to do when we were trying to recruit, which actually I missed alluding to earlier, is when we thought about creating this unique organization, the vision was multifold. One, it's an organization where we want bottom-up innovation. So we want ideas coming not just from 6-4 sitting in some ivory tower in one corporate office, but we want, first of all, we don't sit in corporate offices anymore. We're all at home, but I think you get the point. But we want these ideas emanating from every person on ground. We want people to be fearless. We want people to speak their mind. We have no hierarchies. We are all on first name basis. And I'm telling you, millennials and Gen Z love that. They have ideas and they want to give it. So that was one. The second thing we wanted to do is we wanted to create diversity. Diversity of gender, diversity of thought, diversity of experiences. And on all three, we have made some very, very structured interventions. Now, gender diversity and inclusion is like a subject of passion for me. And that's also one of the areas I specialize in when I did my master's in psychology. I'm kind of very heartened to say that about 50% of our top team is women.
Oh, wow.
And usually, you know, organizations are the other way around.
Okay.
Like, you know, right at the entry level, you'll have more women at the top. By the time the top ends, you kind of have very few, which is a challenge not only of our country, but of many others. But at our company, we have 50% of the top team as women. And we have 33% of the entire organizations as women. And the greatest thing we've tried to do is to get women in roles which are not women-dominated roles in the market. I mean, it's easy to get. Not easy. I would say it's relatively easier to get women in HR.
Correct.
But we try to get women in IT, infrastructure, analytics, risk. You know, which are not traditionally roles which women would have. And I think that's been a very fruitful journey. The first 100 people we onboarded were from 50 companies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's how diverse our landscape of companies we were recruiting was from. Banks, BFSI, FMCG, real estate. So we're very open because every person comes in with amazing amount of ideas and experiences of what worked there. And if you really look at disruption over the ages, Abhash, usually disruption in an industry is done by an outsider. So people adapt to innovations and disruptions, but mostly it's never in their industry. It comes from somewhere else. You pick up that idea and say, okay, why can't I do this here? And it works really beautifully. So we wanted to do that. And we see that the power of getting people from diverse industries, they get such amazing ideas. Mm-hmm. And last but not the least, having got diversity of gender, of ideas, of experiences, inclusion. Like they say, right? Diversity is asking a person to a dance, to a party, but inclusion means you're actually inviting them to dance. So how do you get people to dance? How do you get people to speak? How do you get people to be who they are when you hire them? And rather than trying to translate them into clones of, you know, yourself, give them a voice, have open houses. And we have a lot of these forums, you know, innovative forums, open house forums, skip sessions, where we constantly try to engage. So that's the other thing from a recruitment standpoint when we're trying to hire, and as we build the culture, we've focused on it.
Yeah, interesting. So, but one question here. So you said, you know, diversity, and of course the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah.
But when, you know, referral was a very critical part of this building this team, right? How do you then in that kind of a setting ensure that, you know, diversity is still taken care of? Like you said, yeah, you know, 50 different companies. So yeah, I would assume that if, you know, you hired someone from, say, SpringWorks, I am most likely to refer someone else from SpringWorks as well, right? So how did that work? Interested in
That is always a challenge. And, you know, that always happens that you try to get people you're familiar with, you know, in the past. I think that that only happens when you understand what is it that you're trying to create, and which I think because our leaders are wired very similarly to the way my MD thinks or the way the organization thinks, or I think we kind of were very clear that we definitely want referrals, and not only in your function and other functions, but first understand that what will work in GHF, what is the culture we're trying to create, what are the values this person needs to come in with, what are some of the capability factors which this role needs. To succeed in a company in sales might be very different to how we will do sales, and thereby to succeed with us would need a very different person. So what is the, you know, what is the climate? What's the environment you're going to operate out of, which therefore could be industry agnostic, and thereby you are recruiting more for the role rather than saying, okay, here's a person and force fit him. Number one. Number two, I think because, you know, we've got policies whereby we've got multi-pronged approach to how we recruit. We've got things like a cognitive test, which is a test of intelligence. We've got something like a psychometric assessment to help us understand that how does that person operate, you know, in his in the way what we want from him or her, and how is it that the person operates? Is the person more prone to be someone who's emotionally very aware? Is the person the way we want him or her to lead teams? Is the person kind of fitting that bill? How good or bad is the person in influencing others? And that somewhere or the other then tells us what is the closeness in that person's basic behavior traits to what we want. When you have such a scientific, like I was saying, no, creating these processes unobtrusively in the background, but creating them early on. If we don't do that, then yes, what you're saying is a very high possibility that you'll end up having a company with 75% of folks from one company, and thereby what culture will you create? Because then the culture of that company is the culture of that other organization. So neither are the leaders we work with wired that way. And our processes also facilitate that we hire diverse people.
Got it. And feedback is also a very important part of this equation.
Yes.
Especially for a company that is growing as fast as yours. What sort of feedback processes are in place? What methodology, given that, you know, everything is virtual, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So when you're saying feedback, I'm assuming you're talking about performance feedback and organization
feedback.
To the person.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So I think a feedback is one of the most critical ways in which a person's personality and leadership skills are built. When you talk about things like coaching, mentoring, a lot of those concepts are based on feedback. Feedback from peers, feedback from subordinates, from supervisors, from the larger organization. But I think where I've seen a lot of managers go a little wrong, wrong is a very harsh word, but where I see that managers need to strike a balance better is that we need to understand why are we doing feedback? What is the single biggest purpose of feedback? The single biggest purpose of giving someone feedback is only one, to change the person's behavior. That's it. To influence a person's behavior, to create an inquiry in the person's mind, to look at how that behavior is impacting him or her or the people around them, right? Sometimes, you know, feedback left too late becomes like a channel of venting out for the manager. Sometimes feedback comes as criticism, making the other person feel very defensive. Sometimes feedback doesn't come at all. You know, it comes like at the end of the year, by which time the year is gone and the other person is ends up thinking that, why did you not tell me this earlier? Because, you know, finally, you know, it is that Johari window. There is a part of us which we can't see and others can see. And thereby the idea of feedback is to help the individual understand how the person behaves. And I really think that constructive feedback given with the care and concern, I've really, really seen people shape up so well in their careers with that. And I'm a strong proponent of feedback. The second thing about feedback is that feedback can't be unidirectional. Like, it can't just be from me to my subordinates, or it just can't be from the line manager to his team. It's very, very important for us to get peer feedback. Peer feedback, in fact, is becoming so very critical because, you know, peers see what many other people miss out. Oftentimes, you know, in front of our supervisors, we are at our best behavior. Teams are far more tolerant because they believe, okay, you know, this person's my boss, so you've got a different equation. But peers really, really see how you are. So how do you collect rich feedback to give to that individual so that individual doesn't see it as only coming unidirectional, that my supervisor feels this way, but others don't? So how do you kind of really collect that rich feedback from the organization and then translate? Last but not the least, I think feet can never be back. Feet has to be forward. So if I tell you, Abhash, you know, I think, you know, 3 months back in that one meeting, you were kind of, you lost your temper. And I think in meetings, you just lose your cool. You'll be like, okay, I don't know, you maybe be a little defensive saying, okay, you know, why are you telling me 3 months later? But having said that, suppose you're a very nice individual and you have a great rapport with me, you'll accept it. Now what? What do I need you to change? What are you going to do about it? So how do you bring the feed forward? Saying in future, over the next 3 months, here's the three things I'd like you to do. I've seen if you kind of tell the people in this framework, so what really is the behavior you'd like them to change? How is it impacting people around them? And what is it that you'd like them to do differently? If these three things are put together as a framework when managers are giving feedback to their teams, it works a lot better. The person is not defensive. You give them actionables, and that's how it is done. Now, coming to GHF, our process, because we are such a young company where things are so dynamic, numbers, we've got very, very exciting and ambitious plans of how we want to kind of capture market share. Our process is quarterly of giving feedback. Managers are expected to give feedback every quarter. So we have called something called quarterly managerial check-ins. The other thing is also, goals are also not annual anymore. You know, as we are scaling up, we are realizing the environment we are in. So how do you kind of have these smaller goals, which are quarterly, which are monthly, then, you know, quickly close that goal and give immediate feedback to the person and move on. The second thing we have done is we've added peer feedback. So on a particular project, if people in my team are working with three other people in other teams, before I give feedback to my team members about that, I will seek feedback from them saying, hey, person X from my team worked with you on this project. I'd like you to tell me, you know, what are the things they did well and what are the things they could have done better? Very simple. Two questions. And all this is enabled on apps. It's enabled, you know, you can quickly just type in and I'll get that feedback back. And then I kind of collate it and give it. Other instruments, like we also have a 360 for managers, which can be used, you know, can be collated and given as feedback to the individual. So I would say these, so quick check-ins with our generation, giving them feed forward rather than feedback, and, you know, getting this rich peer feedback on goals. So this is how we are looking at our performance management.
Got it. One last question before we close this podcast. I think 40 minutes, I've just learned a lot from this. What are the two or three key things that you think should people managers keep in mind given this new context that we are in? And what are those things that, you know, will be very important going forward?
When you say the new context, are you talking about the digital age? And
correct.
The work from home and the hybrid
yes.
models, etc.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So I think the world's kind of adopted and adapted very well to this changing scenario of work from home. We never thought it was possible, and businesses are functioning. Some businesses are doing well. Some businesses cannot operate in this environment. Businesses have moved to hybrid models of work. People are working from home in this current environment. I think two, three things which managers need to kind of keep in mind during this time. First things first is the boundaries between work and home have got very blurred. Right. And initially, when this entire pandemic started, there was a lot of excitement. People started working from home, and soon we reached that stage of fatigue and burnout. So everyone, from managers to, you know, individual contributors to leaders, everyone was kind of just getting burnt out. So I think managers need to first understand and empathize with this new reality, firstly for themselves as well as for their teams, that it is a tough time for everyone. We are sitting in homes. Our families are part of our daily lives. They have to be more tolerant. If there are children in the background or if people are getting disturbed, they have to be far more tolerant. They have to be far more empathetic of what employees are going through, number one. Number two, they need to understand fundamentally that work from home does not mean that you're not working. And thereby, you know, at any point of time, one can throw up meetings or spring up these random calls on you. So there have to be clearly defined boundaries. And for example, at our company, we have set those boundaries from a very early on stage, saying that there are days when you would just not have any meetings. In fact, as I'm doing the podcast today, we've got like this long weekend. So today, tomorrow, and day after, us is called a switch off. So the entire organization has totally switched off. We've told our managers not to bother their teams. No emails will be sent. We just added Friday and everyone's out on a long way. Because while you are at home, you still need to recharge. So you need to encourage your team members to think of how you will ensure your mental well-being is done. Just read a book, do some pottery, cook a meal, spend time with your children. Children are also very stressed. I have a teenager at home. And I have my eldest son is in Australia. He's studying there. So I'm equally worried about what's happening. And I'm trying to juggle many, you're kind of juggling many balls. And such is the reality with all your team members. So encouraging them to switch off, encouraging them to do things which kind of help them rewind, recharge is very, very important. Be careful of what boundaries you have set. So women were doing a lot of household chores. Fortunately, now domestic service has gotten back. But during that time, we said, don't call people during lunch hours. So 1 to 2.30, please don't make calls unless it's inevitable or unless there's nothing else you can do. So respect those boundaries beyond a particular point of time in the evening. Don't keep calling people. If people are available, they'll keep picking up the phone, but they'll also burn out. Yeah. That's the second thing. Last but not the least, this entire concept of mental well-being, watching out for signs. So HR team does a lot of that, actually. Yeah. Constantly talking to employees to understand where they are at. Helping them, we have a concept of EAP, which is essentially emotional counseling. We have counselors available, encouraging people to talk to them. There are many people who stay alone. They are unable to travel back to their families. How do you ensure that their mental health is secure? Managers to watch out for any signs of someone burning out and immediately highlighting to us or taking some action there. Connecting informally. Encouraging your team members to invest in learning programs, which we have created over the last 1 year, connecting informally, just like, having a tea party, getting your team together, play a nice game, doing one-on-ones with your team, connecting, though it's virtually, but still trying to do as much as you can. So I would say these are the 3-4 things which managers should ensure. Yeah, sorry. Last but not the least, ensure that your team members continue to learn. Because in this entire time, learning sometimes take a backseat. But I've seen that learning is a very, very good investment during this entire pandemic because you have a little bit more time. So I read a lot of books. I try to spend the time I have trying to read books and staying abreast and relevant. Similarly, podcasts, YouTube videos, what's really happening out there. So constant training and learning development. So I think 4 things is my input to managers.
Nice, nice. Good to hear that because we seem to be doing all of that. So. That's a good validation for us as well.
Sounds very good.
Cool. Thank you so much, Ruhi. If listeners want to reach out to you, which would be the best platform? Is that LinkedIn?
LinkedIn would be a good platform. I'm on Twitter. We can maybe we can share some kind of a mail ID where if they want, they have any questions, they can reach out.
Sure.
So all 3 could be done.
Great. Okay, Ruhi, thank you so much for your time.
Nice talking
and thank
to you
for the conversation.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. See you.